The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I'm joined by Pascal Donoghue, Minister for Public Expenditure and TD for Dublin Central. Good morning, Minister.
Good morning, Anton. I won't be able to talk about Botox or plastic surgery with any authority whatsoever. My heart fell when I heard you brace those topics.
If things get thin later on, I will come back to them and see where we go. Let us start with matters more close to home for you then. Were you surprised to see your predecessor in an overlapping role, Michael Noonan, return to the public fray with comments defending the Apple tax appeal?
Not really, given the prominence the issue has had in recent months and indeed days. Michael, as Minister for Finance, was obviously involved in the issue when it first developed over a decade ago, as was I. And he laid out, I think, very clearly the public reasons regarding why we took the action that we did.
And would you agree with him that it was the right course of action, that you, despite having lost it, that you were right to defend the case?
Yes, I do. And I do for two reasons. Firstly, it's absolutely essential from a corporate tax perspective and indeed a broader tax perspective that we emphasise that we do not use our tax policy to do special deals for any taxpayer. We don't, and we have to make that very, very clear. And secondly, if you look at the corporate tax policy itself and the receipts in relation to it, in the 10 years beginning 2013, we have now collected during that period €126 billion. So many times the size of the original €14 billion. And it's essential that we emphasise the stability and predictability of that corporate tax policy, given how important it is to us. And that's a further important second reason why that action needed to be taken.
Well, this is an interesting that Michael Noonan talks about, because he talks about the potential reputational damage of having lost the action. And what he says is that the losing of the action isn't where the reputational damage accrues. It accrues in the original allegation made all those years ago by the Commission. Would you agree?
Yes, I think this issue has been going on for so long. I think the reputational effect was most felt some time ago. The arguments that we can make that are really relevant to where we are now is that that is an issue that referred to tax opinions in 1991 and 2007. They're no longer in effect. And Michael began the work, which I completed, a huge change in our corporate tax policy. We entered a big global process and took up our rate. We fully implemented anti-tax avoidance directives in our law. And we've changed many aspects of our corporate tax policy to deal with issues that were of concern many years ago.
Can you talk to me a bit about the rights or legitimate, moral legitimacy to other EU member states having an interest in some of this money? Because there are reports that Spain and Germany already are suggesting that this should be shared out among the EU member states. If you're an EU member and you're saying Ireland managed to get a very cosy FDI arrangement with Apple, part of that predicated on or built on a sweetheart deal, which netted Ireland €14 billion, we should have some of that.
So firstly, I would completely refute, as I have throughout our interview, any sense of there being a particular deal or arrangement, though I fully accept now the final decision of the court. The matter is now dealt with from a legal perspective.
Is that not a contradictory position? If you accept the matter, the position of the court, do you not expect that there was a sweetheart deal?
I don't think so. I think it's a very frequent experience that you may have people in front of a court that still stand over the actions they take, but accept fully the legitimacy of a final judicial decision, which I do. In relation to what I would say regarding the competitive environment, this is a hyper-competitive environment for large employers. Other countries across the world use different ways of attracting employment into their country. Tax is no longer an essential pillar for what we do in the way it may have been in previous decades. Infrastructure, skills, the rule of law are now as important for what we do. In relation to the claims that other countries may have, I've long acknowledged this could be a matter. It has little to do with morality. It has more to do with the issue of claiming tax is due in the jurisdiction in which consumption takes place. I'm not aware, as Minister Chambers said earlier on in the week, of any claims being lodged in relation to this, and it's up to other countries to decide how they handle it.
There is a difference between having a common consolidated corporation tax base and having a legitimate, transparent and fair corporation tax that doesn't unduly incentivize FDI. The latter, I assume, is what the Germans and the Spanish have problems with. What the Germans and the Spanish are pointing to is saying, hang on a minute, you ended up in a position where you cozied up to Apple unfairly and engaged in competition with other EU member states, which gave you an unfair advantage. Is that not something that should be compensated?
So that is a charge other analysts, others may make. And it's one, as I have said, that I very strongly refute. We have a low, stable corporate tax rate, which we've now taken up. Other countries compete in a different way. For example, in relation to grants and subsidies and so on. We have made profound changes in our corporate tax policy now over the last decade to deal with issues that I accepted at the time could be a cause of concern. And now, for example, just only a number of months ago, we became one of the first countries to make a decision in changing our corporate tax rate, which was a historic decision driven by our desire to be part of a global framework and European framework on this issue.
So we may not have wanted it, but now that we have it, it is definitely our money.
The money is there. What is now remains to be seen is, firstly, how much will be actually due to Ireland. Secondly, when that will happen. And they are the issues that will become clear now in the weeks and months ahead.
Is there a big variance possible in the total amount that will accrue to Ireland?
So I don't expect so, but the decision was only made last Monday.
In terms of how it then gets spent, obviously you are not going to preempt the budget by declaring your intent on what to do with the 14 million. But in terms of the options as you see them, there's obviously current expenditure, there's capital expenditure, and there's paying down the national debt. What of the merits of the latter? Because surely that gives you the biggest wiggle room and is the most sensible thing to do with it.
If you look at where we are from a national debt perspective, last year we posted a budget surplus of 8.3 billion euro. We're one of the few countries now in the European Union that are running budget surpluses. And this has been a long-standing cause that I have made the argument for, which was the reason we were able to get through the pandemic, the reason we were able to help with the cost of living crisis. Our debt as a share of national income now is around 75%, which is the issue that analysts and the financial markets would look at. And our debt is due to fall in the time ahead again as a share of national income. So the government will decide what to do in the weeks ahead, Anton. I think we should look back at wise decisions we made in relation to EU structural and cohesion funding in the 1990s and into 2000s.
When you
look
say
at
that. National income, that's GNI plus, as in that's our real GNP effectively that you're referring to.
So I think... as opposed to going into the differences between GNI-STAR and GDP with your listeners that are just after 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning, there are lots of different ways in which you can measure what's the value of the income within our country, and you've just highlighted two of them. And on the basis of any measurement of national income, our debt as a percentage of that national income is declining in the time ahead and is already at a reasonable level, given all the expenditure that we've had in recent years.
Is there an advantage to lowering it more? Does it give you headroom in capacity to raise debt more advantageously on the markets when it may be cheaper? Does it make Ireland a more attractive prospect, or are you happy with our current debt ratio?
I'm currently happy with it. And the answer to all of your questions is yes. But that is the work that I have been doing along with Michael Noonan, Michael McGrath, now Jack Chambers, for years. Run budget surpluses. By running budget surpluses, your debt begins to decline. You are then able to borrow at cheaper rates, which we are. And that is where we are at the moment. And that now opens up other choices regarding the 14 billion euro, which the government has yet to make. But one point is worth emphasising, that the budget plans that we have for next year won't change. Because nobody could reasonably propose trying to spend that amount of money extra in an economy in a single year. We just don't have the workers who would be capable of turning that money into additional activity without causing inflation.
So even if it was on capital projects, even if you said we are going to start with bridges, hospitals, motorways, there aren't simply the people to accept that money.
So as I said, no decisions have been made yet in relation to it. But if you look at how we've handled matters like this in the past, I think there are good lessons. When we benefited from structural and cohesion funding a number of years ago, large amounts of money that became available to us were spent over a number of years. That had a huge impact on the ability of our economy to grow, but gave the companies and the state itself time to get the people that we needed to do the work. And I think that will be an important lesson in the decisions that we're yet to make on this 14 billion.
Final thing on that topic, you and I have spoken about this before, but the issue, and it's raised by Ian Guider in the Business Post this weekend, the issue of FDI as a contributor to the success of our economy and the relative lack of innovation and of our capacity to drive companies of significant international scale. Are you concerned by that, particularly following Mario Draghi's pan-European report that said that not just Ireland, but Europe as a whole is bad at that?
So that's a long-standing critique of Irish industrial and economic policy. I sometimes think we don't give ourselves credit for what amazing entrepreneurs in Ireland have done in recent years and businesses.
Few though, isn't it?
If you look at companies like Kerry, Glanbia, I'd argue they have been extremely successful in moving beyond a domestic economy to become really global players.
But these were big beasts for a long time. These are decades, if not half century old companies.
Indeed, but it takes many years for that kind of scaling to take place and then to become global companies. For an economy of our scale, I think we have to be credible in our expectation regarding how many companies we could develop that can reach that global scale. But Ian is making an important point. We have to ensure that we have balance within our economy.
But is there a thing, sorry to cut across, but is there something in how we, the kind of merit that we apply to companies? We, even there, we look at the companies like the Kerrys, where we say this has been a big beast in the Irish economy for 60 odd years. Surely the Stripes are where we should be looking at. A company where it is barely, what, 15, 20 years old and already heading for unicorn status.
But Stripe already have a presence here in Ireland and they made a decision that, for example, they wanted to locate much of their European presence here in Dublin. So actually, that is a good example of
but
how we've managed.
Should we not have many more? Should it not be one above in a pantheon of them?
Indeed, absolutely. And as I said in your earlier question to me, I think it is something we have to be really, really conscious of. But we have in Enterprise Ireland, the best organisation of its kind in the world, I believe, in supporting domestic innovation and helping companies scale up. I believe we've been more successful in doing that than we sometimes acknowledge. But one of the issues for our economy in the years ahead is how we continue to invest to ensure that we have a diversity of employers and taxpayers, which is certainly a priority of mine.
I believe it is now a legal requirement whenever somebody from any of the government parties is anywhere near a microphone or a notepaper that they are asked about whether or not the election is going to be in November or in March. So let me join the fray. We see the Sunday Business Post this weekend with a very good result for your party, pulling clear of your coalition partners by a number of percent and pulling clear of the opposition, which up until relatively recently we were told was going to be the prime party in government. Is it time to fire the election straight after the budget?
So it mightn't be a legal requirement for me to answer that question, but obviously it's one I have to do anyway I want to do. I believe the general election will take place next year. I believe this government will see out its full term. I believe one of the reasons that we have been able to make the case for our efforts is the value of a stable government that has three different parties in it, that still has an awful lot to do, but I believe is making progress. And I believe part of how we'll be able to make that argument is in seeing out as much of the remainder of our mandate as we can.
Setting the speculation around the date to one side, does it matter whether you wait until March? Do you think the electorate, if you knock on their door in November, will say, you're 3 months early, my number one is going elsewhere?
Well, it certainly matters to the candidates in the election, Anton, that's for certain. But from a voter perspective, my own sense is voters are far more interested in the substance of an election rather than the timing. And I know you would honestly expect me to say this, but I'm going to have to say it anyway. In all my engagement with voters in Dublin Central and people across the country, honestly, the number of times this is brought up with me is very low.
What about the number of times it's being brought up with you by backbenchers and by potential candidates who are looking at this morning's poll thinking things are rosy in the garden?
And that's what, as I said to you, of course it's of interest to candidates. Of course it's of interest to journalists such as your good self regarding when it's going to take place. From my engagement with those who will be voting in the election, they're really far more focused on the substance of where we are rather than the timing. And that's what we're going to devote our energy to in the time ahead.
Minister, thank you very much.
The Anton Savage Show. on News Talk.